Cheers.
Cheers. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Busted Business Bureau. I'm Christian Borky. If you like this podcast, please be sure to leave a comment or a review or whatever. Recommend the show to a friend. If you super like this podcast, you can log on to patreon.com/bustedbizbureau for mostly no particular reason, other than fealty to me, I guess. Shout out to the growing number of people who keep coming to the Lincoln Lodge just to see me. That happened like a bunch of times over the weekend. Sorry if you came on a night I'm not here, but thanks for coming. Nice to see you. So we have a Chicago-based episode today, and traipsing through the gauntlet of political chicanery with me is my dear friend, Danica. Danica, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back. I'm excited about this one.
Have you ever driven a car before? Do you have your license?
So it's interesting that you had me on this podcast specifically because I feel like you have a lot of friends that drive, mm-hmm. and I probably haven't parked a car since Barack Hussein Obama was president. That's not to say I'm old, it's just say I haven't driven a car. I mean, okay. I don't think I've parked a car here.
Okay.
I don't recall a time where I've parked a car and used a parking meter here.
That is fantastic. I mean, that I have driven, parked. I know that listeners might think going into this that it's going to be a bunch of woke whinging about how much we hate cars and how much we love public transit. And it's not that. But I am coming out as someone who does drive and does park a car. And I understand the emotional stakes that are within it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have, like, parking issues in California? Or you just, it was, like, fine?
So on the California driver's test, I don't know if it's still this way, but I got my license probably when I was 16. So when I took my driver's test, they don't make you park. Like, they don't make you parallel park.
What?
Yeah.
In California?
The California driver's test does not include. So I knew I would do bad under pressure. So instead of doing my driver's test in the Bay Area, I went to, like, the Central Valley where I know no one would be on the road. And I got 100%.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think that's why every California license plate I see is operated by the most deranged fucking idiot I've ever seen. Because you guys don't have to park on your driver's exams?
No, yeah, you don't have to parallel park.
Uh-huh. That explains a lot.
Yeah. I don't remember much else about it. I remember a dog ran in front of the car while I was doing my driver's test, but I handled it like a pro.
Wow. That, I mean, that's an automatic, you know, A+.
Yeah. I avoided killing an animal.
Mm-hmm. And brave of you to avoid killing a dog. That's fantastic for you.
Yeah. But, you know, now I'm such a... I probably would have killed it now. Just 'cause, based on my values. I'm kidding. I would never kill an animal.
This is a comedy podcast. So today actually is a surprisingly violent and gory episode of Busted Business Bureau.
Really?
Yeah. No joke. It's heavily inspired by the work of Henry Graeber in his book Paved Paradise, How Parking Explains the World. And despite the overweening title.
That guy's probably really fun at parties.
I feel like that subtitle was written by an editor who was like, all right, no one's going to read your fucking book about parking, so we have to say it explains the world. Paved Paradise was, for me, a genuinely emotionally challenging read, which I've not had in a long time. It felt like reading a nonfiction book that, like, I feel like I just read a lot of stuff for the podcast where I'm like, I generally already agree with this viewpoint, but I need more information on the topic. This was something where I was like, oh, man, I'm the problem, and now I have to rethink myself.
Damn.
So I highly recommend the book. It's really, really good.
Is it generally anti-parking?
No.
Oh, pro-parking.
Not pro-parking, I guess. It is pro-car in a way that I found very surprising.
Have you ever met anyone that's like, I love parking my car? I love to park.
In the book, he describes this guy who drives around New York looking for parking spots, and then he sits in his car, like, just enjoying that people think he's going to leave the parking spot. And then he, like, keeps driving.
Is that a sexual thing?
I can only imagine.
What else would it be?
So to get an erotic fixation, it's like people who are super into feet, you know? I wish I had that erotic fixation because, boy, it's easy to fulfill.
Yeah, you know what you want.
You know what you want, and you can get it easily.
Especially New York.
Feet?
Feet or parking. Or not parking. Like, you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Getting off on someone being mad at you.
That happened to me last night. I wasn't driving, but we were parking at a mm-hmm. parking meter spot, and like near the California Clipper. And we were parking. We were just like taking our coats off. Some girl pulls up next to us and is like, "Are you leaving?" Like mouthing it to us. And I said, "No, we are staying." But I said it in the windows up.
Uh huh. And you didn't do any like sign language to say like, "We are."
And then
staying.
I was like, "Why can't she understand what the fuck I'm saying?" I was like, "She's not pulling away." No, we are staying.
It reminds me of the most iconic piece of parking media in recent years, which is that SNL skit with Melissa McCarthy. You haven't seen it.
I don't think. Well, remind me. I don't know.
Well, the whole thing is like, you know, people in an argument over parking and they're doing like big hand gestures to sort of convey their point. So it's like, I will kill you.
Oh, with the gun, yeah.
Drive away. And then she like throws a football. Got it. This is not being filmed, so I guess you have to watch the episode. Anyways, I think it's worth it, as Graybar does in his book, to establish some of the emotional stakes of parking, which sounds ridiculous, but it's something I had truly never thought about. From the opening line of the book, parking is well established as something that, like in the SNL skit, drives people to violence. And deeper in, the following is the worst passage from the book. You ready for this?
Quote. Yeah.
Former NFL safety T.J. Cunningham was a beloved assistant principal at a Denver area high school when he was killed over a parking space dispute by a neighbor. In Las Vegas, Shane Picotta died of a bullet to the chest over a parking space. In the suburbs of Washington, D.C., a man was charged with attempted murder for opening fire on a neighbor who had parked in his spot. The victim was hit but survived. 28-year-old Thomas Rodriguez was killed in Dallas after an argument over a parking space. This was just February 2019.
It's not very nice. I think, so I know we're not cool with drunk driving. I'm anti-drunk driving. But I think I don't have road rage, mm-hmm. because I'm like, some people are having a bad day. Like, I'm over empathetic in that way.
Yeah.
And so, but I think people who do have road rage should be allowed to have a beer or two. Because I think all of these people would still be alive. They're not drunk. They're just calm.
Some people find their namaste by meditating, by following scripture, and some have it at the bottom of two PBRs. And we should be able to validate those people.
Yeah, I don't doubt PBRs have saved lives in one way or the other. Anyway, it's sad though. That's not very nice.
So the book does an excellent job connecting parking to housing inequality, suburban sprawl, you know, short-sighted political nonsense from decades ago, which isn't everything, but, you know, that's not a splashy title. But it explains a lot about how we structure American society. But the part of the book where I felt challenged, and like he was talking to me directly, is discussing how there actually isn't a parking shortage in the country, like everyone would think, like those people driven to violence over mm-hmm. a parking spot. One of the central sound bites that Graybar gives in interviews in the preface of the book is, Americans expect parking to be available, cheap, and directly in front of their destination.
Yeah.
You wouldn't pull up to a mall and expect to park right outside the Sharper Images. Or he said Sharper Images in an interview, which is a very funny reference to make. So, like, why do you expect to pull right up to the cafe or your kid's music class or whatever? And so in the book, he talks to someone who works at a consulting firm that addresses parking issues. And this guy says, quote, almost every place I've ever worked has started by telling me there's a parking problem. What they mean is the parking spot in front of the place that I want to go is not available when I arrive.
Yeah, so especially relevant to talk about at the Lincoln Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
People complain about the Lincoln Lodge parking so much. And I would have this, I don't know if you had this when you were a kid, but when your parents would take you to the grocery store, mm-hmm. and they'd like, if you had to park in the back of the parking lot, it's a few extra, it's like 100 yards.
It's 100 yards.
Why are we freaking out?
And instead, we are going to blow gas, circling around, waiting for someone to leave, sitting there, idling, instead of, it's like the most humiliating ritual to have to park in the back of the mall parking lot.
I'm just like, we have a cart. It's not like we're lugging.
Right.
And even if we were, can we get over it?
Can we, yeah, just carry the bags and extra 100 yards to the car.
Like, you see what's happening around the world? Worried about a parking spot in the Jewel Osco? I don't know.
No, I feel that.
I think I'm going to get mad on this episode.
Oh, you are going to get mad. But that was mind-blowing to me because I do feel like I'm part of the problem. I have been frustrated by parking mm-hmm. kind of around the Lincoln Lodge. There isn't a ton of it. There is a secret free street parking that I'm not telling. I'm not revealing my secrets on the podcast, mm-hmm. but that's where I park.
Is it where we parked?
No.
Okay.
That's actually not free. It is permit parking, and they can give me a ticket at any point. It's just they never have.
Okay. Nice.
So I risk it. I've gotten so much free parking that at this point, like a $50 ticket, it's like, well, I'm just paying for the amount of parking I've stolen. But I do feel that when I go to destinations, I feel like I have to park within a one block radius of it instead of just finding easy and free parking. And so after reading the book, literally today when we went to brunch, I usually park when I've gone there before the podcast, on that like metered street parking right outside, mm-hmm. I went two streets down, made a right, and found free street parking.
Yeah.
So in that way, the book like has reshaped my life. So all this is coming together for a point that's mentioned a lot throughout the book. Paying for street parking is actually a form of traffic control. If it is heinously expensive to park your car somewhere, you're less likely to put it there. And if you know you're going to ticket, you are less likely to put your car there. And he explains through, I'm simplifying it because I'm stupid. But when every single parking space, if people are like, this is cheap and available, I'm going to put my car there. That means there's no parking for other people that are trying to come there. And if parking is readily available for everybody, everyone's going to drive to that destination.
Yeah.
But if parking is inconvenient, if it is inconvenient for you to drive your car, most people, at least in a city, would find another way to
like
get
there. Like Cubs games. Okay.
So that's literally the example I had in here.
Okay.
You ever see the Addison Red Line after a Cubs game? Suddenly everyone from the suburbs is like a public transit expert.
Now, I'm not going to admit to a crime here. But let's say I knew someone who lived in Wrigleyville for about 3 years. And I knew someone who did not have a car at any point.
Okay.
And kept buying parking passes every month. For $15, you get like 30 parking passes.
Yeah.
And during Cubs games, you know, people are thirsty for the parking.
You put one cardboard sign that says $40 easy out.
There is a mosque. There is a mosque across the street from where I lived, from this person who lived there. And there was a mosque across the street from this apartment in question. And at the time, baseball season, the first month, overlapped with Ramadan.
Okay.
So they'd have prayer there, you know, obviously five times a day, and then the extra point ones. I'm Muslim. It's fine that I'm saying this. And so there's this sign that they had, it as said the mosque parking lot, that said Ramadan parking $5. Oh. Cubs parking $50. So if you showed up to the mosque in a Cubs hat, you were getting charged $50 to park there. Which I loved. I thought it was so funny.
You know how many people were just like, well, let's just find the light of Allah for at least 2 hours.
Yeah, we'll pop in there. Not if you're a woman, though. It was a men's only one. They only let me in there sometimes.
What?
When no one else was in there.
So I never considered that how expensive a parking spot will be, you know, making driving less appetizing, that being a form of traffic control, until I'd read the book, because I also expect parking to be cheap, available, and right in front of my destination. So anyways, Pave Paradise. Parking being expensive equals good for traffic control, for future parking. Being violent over a parking spot, bad. Money laundering at a parking garage, epic, but also gets you in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So where does Chicago come into it? Because as listeners would know, the title of this episode is Chicago Parking Meters LLC. So let's get into a time machine and go all the way back to the year 1989. Chicago has elected its second mayor of the Daley bloodline, Richard M. Daley. The first of the bloodline, Richard J. Daley, served 21 years as mayor of Chicago, winning re-election after re-election. You can't be mayor that long and not be embroiled in corruption and cronyism and controversies down the wall boots. But, you know, someone liked him if he gets elected that often. That's not me saying I love the guy. It's just a one-sentence context for listeners of Busted Business Bureau. This guy was mayor for, like, a record amount of time. So Daley Sr., this is actually just for me, was known for verbal guffaws. And his, like, most famous one is after the DNC of 1968, where, you know, police misconduct rampant.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "Gentlemen, get this thing straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder."
That's like when Biden said... President Trump.
I never heard that one.
They ran that guy. President Trump.
President Trump.
Anyway.
That's so awesome. I love this country. So the second Daley, Richard M. Daley, the apple of our eye for this episode. Richard M. Daley was elected in April of 1989. Taylor Swift was born later that year, as we all know. Richard M. Daley surpassed his father's record for the longest-running Chicago mayor, serving 22 years in office. As you can imagine, a legacy of cronyism, political barbarity, but also a guy who loves an expensive and gorgeous project. Mm-hmm. He's the reason we have the Bean, which I didn't know because I'm a bad Chicago transplant, and I did not know that he was the one who commissioned the Bean.
I mean, who fucking cares?
Who cares?
I don't like it.
So, fun fact, the guy who designed the Bean is named Anish Kapoor. And the NRA, like, showed the Bean in one of their ads about guns or something in, like, 2017. And so Anish Kapoor sued the NRA, being like, don't use my fucking work in your ads. And it settled out of court, and I can only hope for, like, a fucking mint, you know, because the NRA is full of money. Anyways. Mm-hmm. Daly Jr. is responsible for, among other things, Boeing's headquarters being in Chicago. He updated the museum campus, which is also beautiful.
Very nice.
By the time of 2008 rolling around, Chicago was in the running to host the 2016 Olympics. Which we did, famously, as you remember. No, just okay. So, Richard M. Daley was the mayor of Chicago from 1989 to 2011. When his mayoralty started, 30,000 metered parking spots in Chicago were set to 25 to 50 cents per hour. That's like most of them. Again, 25 to 50 cents per hour. When the recession hit in 2008, those same 30,000 spaces were still set at 25 to 50 cents per hour. So they had not changed from 1989 to 2008. There were only about 900 meters that had the parking set at a dollar per hour or more, and they were all in the loop.
Yeah.
So, you're Richard Daley. Every businessman and crooked cop and weird guy in the city is your best friend because you've been mayor for so fucking long and no end is in sight. The recession looming large. You've got the Olympics, possible as your mayoral nightcap, bidding you dearly into the good night. But you're also in the middle of possibly privatizing Midway Airport, and you're looking at either raising taxes or doing something drastic to cover the looming threat of the recession. What do you do? Now,
I know the answer, but I want to give it to you. You should have it.
Well, I'm just saying, if it were me, I'd make the Wiener Circle a public entity.
Yeah. There's so many things they could have done.
Yeah.
Namely, the opposite of what they ended up doing.
I mean, I would say sorry to the owner of the Wiener Circle, but we own the boat now. I'm sorry. So the city sold 36,000 of Chicago's parking meters, so most of them, to a conglomerate of investors led by Morgan Stanley. 25% of this investment group, by the way, is just like a fund out of Abu Dhabi. Morgan Stanley and everyone paid $1.156 billion for the right to own Chicago's parking meters for 75 years. At least the last 75 years. So for 75 years, every time you log on to the Park Chicago app to input your meter payment, it is not going to the city of Chicago. It is going directly to the private company Morgan Stanley and its investors. How do you feel? You feel amazing?
I know the long-term implications of this because, you know.
You live here.
I live here.
You're engaged.
Yeah, I'm aware. But, like, I mean, obviously it was short-sighted. I don't really know what else to say. And also, circling back to the Wiener Circle. The way that they're acting with J.B. Pritzker would indicate that it has been nationalized by the state of Illinois. J.B. Pritzker is this is our governor for people who are listening. J.B. Pritzker is constantly at Wiener Circle, posting pictures of their sexual funny little signs. He's always at Wiener Circle talking to the employees.
And also, mind you, I guess for context for listeners who aren't from here, it's a hot dog store.
Yeah, it's a hot dog store.
You buy hot dogs and you eat them there. That's it.
And the employees are mean to you. Like, yeah. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. So he's like literally he is constantly at Wiener Circle doing political stuff, like abortion stuff at Wiener Circle. Yeah. He's not doing abortions at Wiener Circle. He's like posting about like we protect women that in Illinois Wiener Circle. Like I don't know.
I'm getting a sparkly like shirt that says I got my abortion at Wiener Circle.
But like I'm like, has it been nationalized? By Illinois? Like why is he always there?
I think it'd be a smart political move, obviously. Yeah,
I think so too. I would go. If I knew it was giving revenue to like that would be used for teachers and stuff, I do get a hot dog every day, but I'd go there specifically.
Go out of your way to get to the Wiener Circle. So, this deal, I guess, it's funny to call it a deal when instead it's just, it's more like a
highway
vampire.
Robbery.
It's highway robbery. This deal, as described extensively in Graeber's book and every single article that you can find on the subject, it was developed for a year but then set to a vote from aldermen in a matter of 2.5 days. There were only 5 aldermen who said no to it. Most of them, though, loudly objected to it, saying, I don't understand it. And I can only assume voted yes on it for their own political reasons that I don't find particularly interesting. One of the 5 dissents was Toni Preckwinkle, though.
Of course. She's, I love her.
That diva.
I wish she was our mayor.
I know.
During COVID.
So, every deal has its pros and cons, right? So let's talk about the pros. The Daley administration had promised to keep $400 million of the parking deal in the bank, quote, letting interest alone cover the city's old parking meter income of $20 million per year. So if we put $400 million in the bank and let it keep growing and, you know, investing it and stuff, we could still make what we used to make, which is $20 million a year. And so that year, we didn't have to raise property taxes. The con is by the time Daley left office, only $76 million remained of it. And the rest has since evaporated.
Where'd it go?
They spent it on stuff. I mean, it was also the recession, so they just like...
The stock market was bad.
Right.
So during a...
And also they did not... I mean, they said they'd put it in the bank, but they...
What year was this?
2008.
Okay, so it's right before.
Right.
They were like, we're going to put money in the bank and it's going to grow. And then 2009 happened.
Yeah, sorry to these people. Okay, here's another pro. Chicago doesn't have to maintain an app. You ever think about that?
That is so hard.
The con is every time Chicago has a street festival or the DNC or an event that requires you to block off Morgan Stanley spaces, we do have to pay Morgan Stanley whatever they would have made during the period. They're known as true-up payments. So not only do we not make money from the parking meters, but we also shovel money over to Morgan Stanley. And they're constantly suing us, saying that these true-up payments aren't accurately reflecting how much they would have made from the spaces. So another thing is that also prevents us from building more bike lanes or bus stops, because then we'd have to pay Morgan Stanley for the right to build the bike lane over their property, which is the parking spot. And so that has slowed down infrastructure developments just a little bit.
So... I know these evil pieces of shit, like the Daleys, aren't stupid.
Yeah.
Like, they're relatively smart guys, so I have to believe they just did it because they didn't give a fuck.
That's the thing, is like, Daley, you know, obviously love or hate the guy, he was elected a bunch for 22 years in a row. A lot of people agreed with him on most of the decisions that he made or supported him in some way. He was obviously well-liked. This is the one thing that everyone's like, this was fucking stupid and you're an idiot.
Yeah. $1 billion for parking spots for basically ever. We're not going to be here.
We're not going to be.
When the 75 years, we're going to be dead.
And they will be long dead. Whatever they personally got out of the deal, the details of which we obviously wouldn't know. But I also tried to be like fair and balanced and tried to find arguments for like, why would this be a good idea? And there's not a single article that's ever come out being like, well, here's why actually it was, or why they thought it was a good idea at the time. No. There's like, no. I tried to find any conservative source I could even find on the subject. Like, anything. Nothing. It's just like universally understood as a bad deal.
Yeah.
Okay. The pro, we got $1.156 billion. That's cool. The con is the parking rates have doubled or, in fact, quadrupled in some cases the year that Morgan Stanley took over the meters. So it's $2.50 in most neighborhoods and up to $7 an hour in the loop. And again, if you remember, the parking had not increased its price from 1989 to 2008. And then suddenly it actually was reflective of how much this place probably should have cost.
Yeah. And people would have paid it. People are paying it.
People pay it. So that's an L. I can't think of any more pros, but I'll think of another con. Morgan Stanley recooped its $1.156 billion investment by 2019. So now they get to enjoy 64 years of pure profit on the deal.
Man.
Isn't life amazing?
75 years is quite a long time.
It's a long time to have made the deal. And it's kind of crazy, like, what were they offering Mayor Daley or Ed Burke or any of these people?
I mean, for people who aren't from Chicago listening to this, Ed Burke was in city council until like a year ago.
And he's in jail now.
And he's in jail. Is he in jail?
He's in jail now for 2 years.
Okay, yeah.
Or he was sentenced to jail for 2 years. I don't know what he's doing. But.
Yeah, I don't know where he is physically, but... Have I told this story on this podcast where, like, I shadowed at a high school in his
I don't think you've told this story. Ward. I've never heard this.
So I wanted to be a teacher, and then CPS is, I I was like, this is making me sad. I don't know. It's sad. It's making me sad. But I went to, I was shadowing at a selective enrollment high school in Ed Burke's ward at the time where he was alderman and up for re-election. So it was during election season. I was shadowing a civics teacher. So he was talking to these seniors who were all going to vote.
Oh, so he was there.
No, no, no.
Oh, okay.
The teacher was talking to these seniors who were going to vote. They're like, most of them are 18. And he was like, do you guys know who your alderman is? And they were like, no. And he was like, okay, do you remember that candidate forum we had where all of the candidates came to talk to you guys about why you should vote for them? And the students were like, yes. And he was like, Ed Burke was the guy that didn't show up because he had just been raided by the FBI. For anyone who's on the edge of their seat wondering why is this guy, he extorted the owners of a Burger King.
Over their parking lot.
Yeah. It's crazy. Ed Burke is like, shit really flies here. Like, people could just, you could get raided by the FBI six times and you're still a sitting member of the city council.
I think he was an alderman for 50 years.
Yeah,
it's something crazy like that. I had considered mentioning it on the podcast because it had to do with a parking lot, which is very, very funny. A Burger King parking lot is what took him down.
I think what the story goes is he went to the owners of the Burger King and was like, we're rezoning, and if you hire my, like, lawyers from my law firm or something, then
it'll fly right by or whatever.
Yeah, go in your favor or something.
Mm-hmm.
God.
We built this city.
Like, what was the FBI looking for? Burger King receipts? Like, what were they looking for in his office?
Because they have them, I think, on tape saying it. Or they have, like, the quote.
So funny.
So I love this city. It's fucking awesome. So that is, I mean, like, if you're clicking in for just the busted business alone, that is the busted business, right? Mm-hmm. Of the political machine of Chicago took one of our most valuable assets and just sold it off. I want to circle back to the book, though, and go back, I guess, to the violence and gore. Because these people are, like, the people who, like, write tickets for parking, right? They are making the city of Chicago the only money that we get from parking. Like, when they write the tickets. Because when you pay a ticket, that actually does go to the city of Chicago.
Okay, I support them.
Okay, literally,
yeah. All hail the meter maids.
All hail the meter maids. However, as we were talking about at brunch today, I've personally borne witness to a lot of violence against meter maids.
Yeah.
A lot of verbal abuse. I've actually never seen anyone, like, get into a physical fight, but just by biking around or driving around or walking around the city, I can probably count, you know, 5-6 times I've seen someone, like, screaming some of the most offensive things you could think of to someone whose job it is to write a ticket because you are parked illegally and you are either blocking a bus zone and you're going to delay a bunch of people's entire day, or you're parked in front of a fire hydrant. What if there's a fire, et cetera, et cetera.
I have no sympathy for people who get parking tickets and complain about it.
Do you ever meet someone whose worldview is particularly harsh and they're like, we need more cops, like, more prisons, we need to make an example out of people? You ever see someone like that get a parking ticket and suddenly they're fucking Michel Foucault?
Yeah, like... Oh my God. I have a friend, I won't say who gets parking tickets all the time.
Okay.
And it's just like, she's like, well, it's like hard to find parking in my apartment. And I'm like, well, that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
Because it's like, okay, you're complaining about parking. You're going to get them. Them's the rules.
Them's the brakes.
And
you have to factor that in when you got the car.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, yeah, you park far away, but that's just, like, the price you pay. I don't know. It's just, like, it's a convenience thing. I'm like, do you really expect not to be inconvenienced at all?
Yes.
Or it's just, like, whatever, you know? I just, when people get a parking ticket, I'm like, you parked there.
You did it. We could walk out right now, and I could have a parking ticket on my windshield because I am presently parked illegally.
I'm sorry to Code Pink. I'm quitting my job. I'm going to become a meter maid because they are the protectors of justice in the city.
They are. And, you know, like, I know for some it sounds ridiculous. The only time I've gotten my car towed is because I parked in the bank parking lot that's right outside my house. And to me, I'm like, ruckus and justified, right? Because it's like, the bank is closed. Nobody's using the lot. I was working a double shift and I had to go in and, like, change my clothes, take a quick shower and come back out. And when I came back out, my car was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find vampiric, and sure, private towing companies are their own form of vampires over a space that's not being used anyway.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are, I would argue, most parking violations, I guess mine too, but whatever, that are getting in the way of something vital for the city,
yeah,
or someone's day, or, like, anything like that. So Graybar interviews this woman called Anna Russi, who is a New York City parking attendant. She was a parking attendant for, I call her attendant. I guess I don't know if that's the word. Agent. Whatever. She's supposed to write the tickets. For like 30 years, quick rundown of her career. Ready for some highlights? She wrote an average of 135 tickets per day, which is 100 more than the average worker.
Whoa. Queen.
She was once awarded New York City's Woman of the Year, despite ticketing Mayor Koch's private car. Chewing him out of his face. She has been beaten, spit on, screamed at, everything under the sun. Still, when one driver complained that he can't get a ticket because he left his dog in the car, her response was, "Can I have his license and registration?"
LOL.
So, Graybar interviews her, and she has a lot of valuable things to say about her work as a parking agent. Quote, "You had traffic agents beaten bad, someone's books torn, clothing, radio, forget it. They were abused." And then Graybar extends on that. Abused. There were more than 500 police reports involving the city's ticket agents every year, including nearly 100 serious assaults. Again, this is New York City. A traffic agent who ticketed a cop in Long Island City found her tires slashed. Two supervisors drove out to talk with the police about the incident and left the meeting to find their tires slashed. When the city recommended New York State make it a felony to attack a traffic agent, Bronx Councilman Rafael Colon objected. Quote, "If they're getting beat up," he reportedly said, "it's because they deserve it." Most cities don't keep official data on how many parking agents are assaulted. Chicago doesn't. But I want to read one more quote from the book. Quote, "One parking officer was assaulted by a priest in his collar. Another went to the hospital only to learn his x-ray technician was the attacker."
Oh my God.
Yeah. And this is New York City alone that we're talking about. He didn't interview Chicago parking agents, nor have I guess, for this podcast. So I've done bad work. But I think just knowing popular culture, violence against parking agents is normalized, culturally accepted, I guess, and frequent. However, we don't keep a official data on it. And so it's just mostly anecdotal evidence. But there was a survey in the UK or something where 90% of traffic ticket agents or whatever had been abused in some way, assaulted verbally or physically, et cetera, et cetera. So Chicago actually did pass an ordinance recently making it criminal to assault a parking agent.
Is it not criminal to assault someone already?
It's
just like a regular person. So it's like, okay, if they have the vest on, it's okay. If it's just some random person standing by your car, that is a crime.
No, they made it like a more, I guess, specific crime.
Okay.
Now, it is, as you know, a felony to attack a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a felony to assault a parking agent. You can get a $500 to $1,000 fine and 3 to 6 months in jail. That's the ordinance that they passed.
Okay.
And as you remember from the Bronx councilman that I mentioned 2 seconds ago, it's not like the cops are ready, willing, and available to investigate traffic agents getting assaulted because they also don't like them. Because, as you know, cops love parking in the bike lane or blowing red lights, which I guess a traffic agent wouldn't stop you from doing. But, you know, they love parking their cars in very inconvenient places. I take pictures all the time.
And sometimes police officers aren't very good people.
Hang on, that's a pretty...
This might be anecdotal. But, never mind.
It's also like cops also hate these people
because
they're always putting their own cars in spaces that they shouldn't be expecting. It's like all described in detail in the book, right? Well, it's just a little depressing for the podcast. And at some point, it just becomes a book report about Henry Graybar's book. So that's one aspect of the parking situation that makes Chicago even more infuriating. We depend on these people for key city revenue. We make $200 million a year from parking ticket, payments.
So basically, if you have experienced injustice via the meter maids, and you're very upset about the way Christian and I are talking, don't be mad at the meter maids. Be mad at Richard Daley.
Go find Richard M. Daley.
And is he alive?
He is alive. Give him a piece of your mind. Because there's just something perverse about parking agents getting constantly abused and attacked on a job, but we depend on them and only them for parking-related revenue because of decisions of long-gone politicians. Well, I guess Richard Daley is still around, but you know what I mean. Politicians who aren't serving you anymore, for the most part. And so that is that pisses me off, I guess. And it did change my opinion on the people who write those dumb little tickets.
Yeah, next time I see one, even though I don't have a car, I'm going to thank them for their service.
Literally, I'm saluting them in the streets.
We need community watch groups to protect the meter maids. Community defense.
I have fun facts that I want to share with you that I got from Mother Jones' article. So, because of the aforementioned situation I described to you about Chicago's parking, how we don't make any money from the meters, etc., we are kind of different from other cities in how we deal with parking-related debt, or ticket-related debt, I should say. So, this is from a Mother Jones article where I learned this, but Los Angeles has a 5-year statute of limitations on traffic ticket-related debt. So it goes away after 5 years. And so
why would you pay it?
Well, exactly.
Okay.
but as of 2020, as of 2023, I think, they've accrued $21 million of parking debt. Or not parking debt, I'm sorry, just any traffic-related ticket debt. So it could be like blowing a red light or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
New York City has an 8-year statute of limitations and over $238 million of traffic ticket debt. Chicago does not have a statute of limitations. We owe over $1.145 billion in traffic ticket-related debt. And not all of this is from parking meter violations. Some of it, like I said, is from red lights, mm-hmm. school zones, city stickers that you don't have, the like. But I can't help but feel that we have such a draconian parking debt thing because we've sold all of our fucking spaces. We need the money.
No forgiveness. And honestly, I'm there. Yeah. Pay your fucking parking ticket. Just kidding. My friends, if you have money, pay your fucking parking ticket.
Well, and so that's where the Mother Jones article goes with this, of most people who have debt related to traffic tickets or mm-hmm. parking meter violations are in our poorest neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They pay a disproportionate amount of this ticket debt. And so that would also, you know, if I'm already in a bad situation and someone's giving me a fucking ticket, that would also drive me to
Absolutely.
Insane levels of violence. And for Chicagoans, being in ticket debt prevents you from getting municipal jobs. So it's...
Really?
Yep. So that would be an awesome way to pay off your aforementioned ticket debt, but you can't get a municipal job if you're in ticket debt. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so that leads to just like a cycle, right? If you... There was a woman they interviewed in the article where she had bought a car from a friend for like, you know, a few hundred bucks, but she didn't have a city sticker on it, so she's getting ticket after ticket after ticket. She gets the car impounded, and she's like, well, I can't get the job I wanted to now because, like, I wanted to pay off the debt, but I can't do that because I have so much debt. It's a whole, you know,
yeah.
self-defeating cycle. So in that way, it's not like I understand or condone violence against meter maids, but I understand where a lot of people would theoretically be coming from of, like,
absolutely,
I cannot afford another one of these things. But again, directed at Richard Daley.
Yeah.
Go find him. No, I'm just kidding. It's a comedy podcast.
Yeah, we're not. We're joking. We don't even know where he is. I didn't even know he was alive.
You thought somebody already got him.
Yeah.
So Chicagoans are not going to take this lying down. Basically, the second the clock struck midnight on 2019 and Morgan Stanley was doing nothing but profiting from this deal, I can only assume Chicagoans got to work on a lawsuit.
Yeah.
With your knowledge of U.S. law, who would you sue in this situation and why? Would you sue Chicago or would you sue Morgan Stanley? Or would you sue meter maids?
Yeah, I would sue the meter maids. No, I'm kidding. I have to think about this.
Yeah, that's okay. I put you on the spot of like, hey, make me a lawsuit right now.
Okay, the city or the company?
Yeah, who would you rather sue?
Well, the city doesn't have money to pay the lawsuit because they sold the parking meters. So I guess I would sue the company, the entity with more money.
And that is the right answer.
Yeah.
So this is how we get You Tricked v. Chicago Parking Meters LLC, which, by the way, is the company that they've invented to collect all the money or whatever.
Okay.
So it's called Chicago Parking Meters LLC. I think they have an interesting take on it in their initial complaint to sue Chicago Parking Meters LLC. Because when I was trying to find all the information about the lawsuit, it came up on this website called climatecasechart.com.
Hmm.
I was like, climate case? What's that about? So I'm going to read you the summary of the complaint filed in 2021. And by the way, Climate Case Chart has a very detailed timeline, including like all the documents. It was a very good website. Okay, anyways. quote, three Chicago residents filed a lawsuit challenging an agreement under which the city of Chicago granted a private company monopoly control over the city's parking meter system for an astonishing 75-year-long period. The plaintiffs allege the agreement was made without regard for changes in transportation resulting from climate change and the imperative need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. You're making a face that is also indicative of what other people thought.
All right.
Can we get serious?
Wait, you're so fucking right. Because in the motion to dismiss it from the opposition, they were like, can you be fucking serious?
Yeah.
But you guys want bike lanes and you're, why are you suing us? Like, what is the, they said several times, like, you haven't established the harm done, which I understand legally is like very difficult to do for a lot of people who experience harm, not on like a quantitative level.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically the motion to dismiss was like, can you be serious? And so they refiled it. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I need to say one more thing about the motion to dismiss. They include an entire list of relevant cases. It's pages long, and it's, like, really devastating. One of them, though, was Reapers Hockey Association versus Amateur Hockey Association of Illinois. It's where an amateur league sued a four-team amateur league, saying they wanted a fifth team in the league. And so that was included in the relevant case text.
So, was this just three random people, or was it, like, suing on behalf of the city? Like,
this is three people. They were not suing on behalf of Chicago. They were suing on behalf of, like, Chicago drivers. And what they also said, in addition to the climate change bullshit, was you're violating the Sherman Antitrust Act because there's no competition for these parking meters. And you guys keep increasing the rates, putting us in a bad position.
It's also a bad argument because it was just owned by the city beforehand entirely.
The fact that you can see right through this is unfortunately exactly where
I'm
this
not,
is going.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not even smart.
So,
I bet the judge put his head in his, or her.
Her.
Her head in her hands.
So I'm really excited to read to you how this went. Eventually, it makes its way up to the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, and we get the opinion penned by Diane Pamela Wood shortly before retirement. And I want you to picture this with her head in her hands. So in it, she mentions the obvious to most law scholars, I would imagine, which is state action antitrust immunity. It's a doctrine that basically says, like, if a city makes a bad decision, like, you kind of have to honor that. Or if a state, I guess, makes a bad decision like this, you would, in fact, have to honor it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the city used to own these parking meters, and now it's just a private company that owns these fucking parking meters. So we have to respect it. It's valid. Ooh. But then she delivers this heater. Quote, the deal itself might have been foolish, short-sighted, or worse. And if one is to believe news reports, it may have saddled Chicago with the most expensive street parking in the country. But that is not enough to state a claim for a violation of the antitrust laws.
Yeah. Like, literally, the only way out of it I see is Chicago just not honoring the deal and seizing it.
Mm-hmm. That, I mean, like, that's the end of the notes that I had written, because it's like, well, that's about the current state of things. That was 2023, and we have just no end in sight for this fucking deal.
Mm.
And so now every time you park your car, honestly, this has made me rethink how I do street parking, because if I park in, I get away with it enough where if I don't pay the meter fee or whatever and I get a ticket every now and then, I'm like, well, I'd rather pay Chicago for the ticket than pay fucking Morgan Stanley. Now, does the math add up? I'm not sure. But that, at least, is how I sleep at night.
Damn.
So, that's the busted business about Chicago. How do you feel, Danica?
You know, that sucks. It's like, really, there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Richard Daley ever thinks about this?
This is the thing that ended his political career. Like, I think he didn't run for re-election in 2011 because he knew, like, he boofed this one real bad.
Damn.
And we also, as you know, did not get the 2016 Olympics. He'd also failed at that. Where did they put that?
Oh my god, I hope the Olympics never come here. I hate when Lollapalooza's in town.
I hate when NASCAR comes to town. Why does NASCAR come to town?
Yeah, no. Ridiculous.
It's the worst.
You know they race on the street?
I do know they race on the street.
Why the hell would they do that?
It's crazy.
And you know how many fucking parking spots they're using?
So we have to pay Morgan Stanley every time we have fucking NASCAR here.
Oh my god.
It's the worst.
What's in
is in Dubai part of this? Part of the money's going to, where is it?
Abu Dhabi, which is a city in the United Arab Emirates somewhere.
Okay. They get some of this money?
Yeah. They, in fact, get, I can only assume, 25. They had a 25% investment stake. I don't know what that shakes out to when they're paying, I guess, the investors, but I can imagine it's a lot.
Have you seen Abu Dhabi?
I mean, the pictures on Google Images are damning.
Yeah. We built Abu Dhabi. We should nationalize Abu Dhabi. The city of Chicago.
An eye for an eye.
Yeah, 25% of Abu Dhabi actually belongs to people in Chicago who have vehicles they need to park.
And the governor of it is the general manager at the Wiener Circle.
J.B. Pritzker's proxy is the Wiener Circle.
God, what a city we live in.
Yeah.
So that's your Chicago episode of Busted Business Bureau.
Thanks for having me on, Christian.
Thank you for coming. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
Oh, subscribe to my Substack, danica.substack.com.
I love your writing on Substack.
Thank you.
I love your writing in general.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay, well, everyone go follow Danica on Substack, and I will see you next time for Busted Business Bureau.